Hey, thanks for listening to Made In. This podcast is hosted by me, Jasmine, and my better half, Evie. And we are two Asian Canadian women in Toronto talking about current events, culture, and society moments. We hope that Made In is a safe living room space where you can feel like you're sitting on the couch with us and joining in on the conversation. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Jazz.
Hi, Ev. What's up? How's your day? It's a heavy day.
It is a heavy day. We are recording this in the week of the Atlanta shootings that took the lives of 8 and a targeted attack against, you know, Asian women and femmes in Atlanta. It's something that obviously still weighs on our mind, and it's compounded by the fact that obviously this violence hasn't stopped and it constantly comes up and constantly being seen all the time on social media, on all different forms, being sent all this stuff. But we just wanted to basically break it down too, just like we did last year on the day of when we had heard all this kind of stuff, talking about how, you know, we went through it and trying to digest it. But I don't know, Jazz, like we also want to talk about Turning Red, but it's always like, we will talk about both, but it's always like, I want to celebrate these things.
I think it's
great. And it's always kind of met with like this fear. And I know you were feeling this like pretty heavy early on, even last week. So what was that like, just seeing all those kind of videos come out and stuff?
Yeah, it was like such a pattern of dissociation and maybe like living in my own ignorance that because maybe we didn't continuously see attacks happen like in the height of COVID, that when I start to see it here popping up again, I didn't maybe see a pattern of it, I guess, or I didn't register as a continuation of what we've been dealing with the entire year. So when I kept seeing it maybe day after each other, like when the pace was picking up, how frequent these incidents were showing up on our like mainstream media, I was like, holy shit, like I'm brought right back to the feeling of last year. And it was such like a sore spot that I didn't realize it needed more tending, I guess, in a way.
Yeah.
And I think one that really hit me the most was the mom who was stabbed in the liquor store. Looking at her photo, it literally looks like an every single Korean mother. So that really hit hard home for me. And then, yeah, it's like the repeat of trauma porn just being shared over and over again. And it's very sad to see that we haven't progressed. And it sucks because I don't want to, you know, diminish all the amazing works and the money that we raised and amplifying all these voices in the past year that we've been able to do, but it just seems like we're back at ground zero, which is like so demotivating.
Yeah. And I think it's like also what you said so importantly, like it showed up on your feed, but unfortunately, like I have to assume like this happens all the time and we just don't even see it. And
right.
Again, because of all these precarious situations, like we might not be the first person to bring it to, definitely not the police, as you know, there's a lot of situations, mm-hmm. especially with sex workers, that there's a barrier there and police aren't the most helpful in those situations. And yeah, I can't imagine this is like the only four, like there's four in New York in the couple of months where there's deaths involved, right? And just like one was even, you know, like trigger warning everyone being like pushed into a subway station. And like, it's like just horrific. Like these things are just like, it's scary. And so like, whether you think this is only in New York, people make those arguments, like it's not, because basically we're all a melting pot, we're living it. And thankfully, mm-hmm. I haven't seen or heard much, but it doesn't mean it's not happening and it's not ongoing. It's something that we should definitely like, you know, be weary of. So like, yes, Atlanta happened and it's not the only time where Asian lives matter, or like to, you know, stop anti-Asian hate, but mm-hmm. like, it should be ongoing. It should be always, because it's still something we're fighting against for sure. Mm-hmm. Like it's not just like something that just stopped. And I think the most apparent not the craziest thing, but like the saddest thing recently was like, I was watching obviously these deaths, but I was watching Philip Lim, like a designer in New York, mm-hmm. everyone knows him, his story. And like, he has been really on his personal account on Instagram, mm-hmm. has been really outspoken about these things. And he was recording that one bookstore in Chinatown, New York, that was giving away free pepper spray and alarms, you know, just for self-protection. And the line was like around the block, which is like, mm-hmm. in New York, it could be like the Supreme line. It could be like any fashion drop, but this is not that. Like, this is,
it's
so fucked up.
People's safety. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in Canada, we can't even carry pepper spray. So like, I think last summer, even like in our neighborhood, there was like a rampant like driver in a white van that kept like attacking women. So like my roommates and I just have to get like an alarm. It's like a keychain thing that you bring that makes like really loud noise. But like there isn't even really anything as a woman. Yeah, that's that you can bring with you. I even like thought about getting like hairspray to like pretend it's like some spray to like put something on. But yeah, and to your point earlier, like there's been such reports and like statistics about Asian crimes are the least to be reported because there's a language barrier and like other barriers and stigmas around it.
Yeah.
So the only ones that we do get to hear are the ones that are brave enough or that are so like violent enough that makes to the headlines. And like, you know, there's so many of the unsaid ones and unshared ones that we don't even get to, you know, shine light on.
Yeah. And so in light of but to commemorate, you know, the lives that were lost in Atlanta and then the more recent ones. And then this week, another video emerges about like a woman who was punched 125 times.
An elder, like,
yeah,
straight up, like small, fragile, unfortunately, just like an elder, unprovoked, literally trying to open the door to get into her house.
Yeah. And it's just so, I can't, like, the video is everywhere. And I know there's like a couple of reporters, especially in New York, including one who's a Korean American C-fan, Kim, who he constantly shares these things. But there's also obviously time to take space. Like, I could not watch that video.
No.
Like, I'm not going to watch someone that looks like my grandma, my mom get beat down. And I wouldn't watch that of any video anyways.
Any race. Yeah. Like, it just is so traumatizing. And I hate that. And this happened last year too, when, you know, Asian people in our community had to be like, please do an explicit trigger warning. Like, you do not need to share the video. And like, I'm so conscious about that because I kept seeing the video too. And it was so hurtful to see. And yeah, it really doesn't leave you feeling, you know, motivated to even like speak up or like, you know, share it. So I think being mindful of that is being a bit more spoken about to just, you know,
make sure
that everyone's comfortable.
It is so alarming. And I think it's like, I think one thing that we just like, we need to do is like, of course, share these things. And like you said, apply the trigger warning because it's completely triggering. But really take ownership. Like, you know how we were talking about last year, how we were second guessing, oh, is this a target attack? Like, that was the first assumption. I think we should follow our instinct more and understand that it is like women are, well, Asian women in New York and beyond.
I mean, even men, that guy got like hit with a hammer.
Yeah, and men. I don't think it really is like that. But again, for Asian women, I think there's just an extra disassociation in terms of, you know, like submissiveness, like sexualized, objectified, you know, all these kind of things where we're kind of seen like thrown on the road or not be able to defend ourselves. And it's not saying just that, but I think there's like, we need to be more sure of ourselves and know that this is because of these things and know that we can speak out about it and feel worried for the people that look like us and the people that are in our family. And like, I call my mom, and even when I'm walking, like, I'm worried sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not so different than those cases that have happened, you know, not even 2 hours away from me. Like, this is not something that's
we're not saying random. If like, it's not like it's not happening in our backyards, but yeah, I was actually thinking about some of the reporting, even about like the last few incidents that's happened, like in New York, the way that like the police department talks about it, they are always like, they haven't confirmed if it's a racially provoked or like racially attacked. And like, I don't know if I found that recently they were able to confirm it, but it's only because like the attacker is also using, you know, using verbiage that obviously is like about
Asian
targeting
bitch,
Asians. Yeah. But then, if you think about it, like those cops that are, you know, making the decision to see if it is Asian provoked targeted or not, or like white men mostly.
Yeah.
So like, what is the threshold? Like, is there like a checklist that, you know, confirms if it's yes or no? And to be honest, like, I understand like in legal sense, maybe there does need to be, you know, qualifications to make it under that umbrella to put the actual charge, or maybe it won't stand up in court or like whatever. So I do understand like that process, but like, it does suck when like, you know, there's such an evident pattern and we still need to like jump through these hoops. And can't we just be like, you know, this is the millionth Asian person getting violently attacked in New York. Like, can we just call it what it is without having to go through this like legal, like abundance of like hoops to like
no,
claim
yeah.
it?
No, that's why I think I would say like the law and the police, they don't work to support that. Like you can say it was an attack and you can charge a person for it, but by making it really murky whether it was racist or not, like I don't think we need to think about that. Like the mm-hmm. cases are so similar. It's unprovoked. It's a people going about their day. There's one that was just like someone who was collecting cans, like everyone we would see here doing the same thing, or going onto the subway or going home or all this kind of thing, like going to open the door to her house. Like these are not attacks, of course, that have anything to do with them yelling at back or there's some kind of issue or whatever. These are just totally unprovoked. And just because the last one had the word Asian to it should not be the only qualifier of what was a hate incident, right? So mm-hmm. I think like we should be more sure of ourselves and understand that, yeah, the police are not well equipped, like as a mostly white agency in many different jurisdictions and cities, to be speaking on what's racist and what's not. Like, I don't think mm-hmm. anyone can say that. And I think that we should trust ourselves more instead of, you know, the benefit of the doubt is something we give so much of because that's who we are. And that culturally, mm-hmm. like not all of us, but like culturally, that's a thing where we're just like, no, we have it good. We're fine. And I'm not saying that we don't. I'm just saying like, you got to own up to an understanding, like this is not just an attack. It's not just a random attack. Yeah, it's random, but it's a pattern that's happening. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, it's led to situations, i.e. all these people lining up for free pepper spray. So like there is a fear, and that's a well-known fear, and this is a truth that we're sharing. And if I was in New York right now, like I'd be scared.
Give me a free flight to go to New York this weekend, like I actually wouldn't go. Like I'm actually so scared. And but like talking about all this, like yes, like I was reflective about like, oh, like did I not do enough to advocate or share organizations? And like, I was trying to think about like actionable things I can do that we're in this place now without like having thinking about the past. Like, I'm not really sure. Is it like changing regulations? Like, is it providing more supplies for self-defense? Like, is it organizations that we can try to raise awareness and donations for that help defer this? Like, I just don't know what the cause is to like, you know, revert yeah. this. Cause you know, like I just felt, and like, maybe you like, this is more so like an open conversation. Cause I was like, I want to action. I don't want to just like share my story, share all these stories and like let all the people on my like Instagram stories, I feel guilty about it. Like, what are some actionable things that I could personally do? And then maybe like, you know, put the money where my mouth is. Like, I just don't know like what my next steps are.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, at least like what I've learned, cause I've had those questions too. It's like, I can't personally stop all this pattern of hate crimes. Like, no one person can do that. But I honestly, like, I would think that like what we're doing right now, what you're doing, even sharing it without feeling, not like imposing it on people, but like sharing your heart, I think those are important things, even though there's no monetary value behind it, or like you're not giving physical cash. Like, this is the thing, like this is why turning red, this is why representation mm-hmm. is important. It's because, and representation not as a one token character, representation as someone with an agency, or the writer is this or whatever, because mm-hmm. unfortunately, like, because we're like, obviously we're seen as disposable or not even human, like to the eyes of some people who are literally mm-hmm. going around hunting us down kind of thing.
Putting the blame of COVID on yeah, us.
Without understanding that we're a real person with full feelings or whatever, anyone that looks like us mm-hmm. in the same boat, you need more of that storytelling. You need more of those details in people's lives. You need more of that perspective, right? So like, I'm going to gain more perspective of other people and empathy because we grew up watching people that weren't like us on the main screen, right? Like, we understand what the struggles are. We understand they can, like, white people can be full people. No one's the same person. But like, mm-hmm. when attackers or people see us, or racist people see us, it's like, doesn't matter. You look Asian, I'm going to hurt you. And that's just a total like taking away of our agency, our human, our stories, our voices, and just labeling all us as one kind of mm-hmm. entity, which is definitely something that Indigenous people that go through, and Black people go through all the time too, right? Mm-hmm. So we, like, I think like what we can do obviously is be strong and tell our stories, and why, you know, tell our stories, tell stories of celebration. Like, turning red for me was like a mm-hmm. really high point, being like, you know, you got to see inside the life of something that I relate to a bit more. And mm-hmm. maybe you wouldn't make fun of me as a 13-year-old Asian girl who's awkward and trying to figure my life out. Instead, you would try to understand. And that's like a blueprint where someone can try to understand. Or even in small ways, like going to really small community groups. It's true. Like, it's hard to find. Mm-hmm. One that I found locally for Toronto is Butterfly, that supports sex workers and people who are massage workers that are of Asian descent, East Asian, Southeast Asian, South Asian. And, you know, they glorify their work. And because that's what puts money on the table. And we should not shame that. We should not stigmatize it even more. And that's why those people are being obviously the easiest targets of these entire situations, because people in this society already don't, like many don't even accept them. Governments don't accept them. Like, anyone doesn't accept them. So it's like supporting those causes and really seeing people as people. That's the stories we're missing, I think, as Asian people. And I mean, across the entire diaspora, I would say even more so like with Southeast Asian people, there isn't representation. The stories are not there. And those things and honesties are the things that will help us, not help us, will help other people, unfortunately, have to see us as human, which sounds fucked up. But when
it's
you
like
have
the bare minimum, like we're asking for the most bare minimum.
Exactly. So when someone's like, well, this turning red didn't relate to me, why does it have to relate to you? There's
that
literally
comment, oof.
There's so many of them, though. Yeah. And it's like, why does it have to relate to you for you to care about something? Like, I don't relate to Margot Tenenbaum of like Wes Anderson. Like, I wanted to. I thought it was awesome. But I could understand the struggle. I may not live that life at all. But like, I understand what like why she's like all cold. And I found ways to romanticize that. So why the fuck is it so hard for you for one fucking film that helps explain the struggles that we go through, like the two worlds, the cultural situations? Why can't you watch that and just be like, it's empathy. I understand better now. And I think when I think about an Asian girl, or like as a child, you look at your Asian, I guess, female schoolmates or whatever, you would understand them a bit more. Like, that's the whole point. That's it.
Conversation around that for Turning Red really shook me, because I, and again, maybe this is me being naive, but like, I really didn't even think there was going to be that kind of backlash. And I think to you, maybe it wasn't a surprise because you've seen it over and over again, being in the journalist industry. But yeah, I was so shocked. I actually had to read, I'm referencing this one tweet that I saw of, I think it's like a white journalist who like really shit talked a review of Turning Red because he really felt like it only targeted a very small group of people to understand a story. And I couldn't understand like what the context of that conversation was, because I just had no idea that could come out from watching this movie. So that was so embarrassing. And to your point, we literally, the amount of Disney and Nickelodeon shows that we watched that didn't have anyone that looked like us, but we made it through our high school years and our teenage years trying to, find ways that I can actually attach myself to. And we turned out to be fine. And we were able to resonate and find stories that made sense for us. But then for you to like shit talk and, you know, diminish the amazing accomplishment of this movie because you as a white man couldn't understand family values and honoring what that means, that legacy, and like having just friendship dynamic. Like, I'm so sorry for you that like you really couldn't see past that.
Yeah, I mean, it really just shows like your empathy is extremely limited, because in a world where we are good humans, I would say, is we listen to each other's stories. I may not have walked in the path of someone who is Indigenous or Black, but I am here to listen, and I'm here to understand and empathize and fight for things that you want to see, like in representation and stuff like that, because I see that's the thing. And I've also, again, we all tried to be Lizzie McGuire's friends. We all tried to be Lizzie McGuire. We still have to deal with like the point of Turning Red, which is like, I wrote this in like an op-ed for the
Star. I know.
Star.
I'm so sorry. I'm a horrible friend. I didn't even read it yet.
No worries.
Or else I would have been quoting you back right now. I'm so
no,
sorry.
No, I mean, I'll just give you a synopsis. It's like, it really breaks down the two worlds. Like my family world, which was too Chinese, or I really respect my roots though. Like I'm not trying to say I'm trying to erase that. That is a quintessential Toronto story of immigrants, of refugees, the kids that live through it. And I love my Chinese cultural roots. Like I really do. And the virtues that I learned from my family. However, when you are trying to bring that, and that's the first thing you know, and your family has no real idea of what school or integrating is like as a child here, you are going to be faced with like this existential crisis at like kindergarten, understanding that you don't fit in, getting those weird ass questions. Like, what the hell are you eating? Or like, why do you look like that? Or blah, blah, blah. Like, that's what May goes through. Like, she wants to be the perfect kid for a family because I relate because I want to bring honor to my family name. That's very important to me. Like that is mm-hmm. very important still to this day. But when you're at school, like, of course you're learning new things. Of course you have to deal with all these identity crises because people are asking you additional questions. Like mm-hmm. Lizzie McGuire is never going to have to fight to belong. Like she already is there. Like she might have to face other bullying struggles or other things, but not like this thing that you can't even define yourself. Not like, why do you look like that? Like that is, yeah. what do you mean? Like, I don't know why I look like that. I was born like that. That's my family. And there's a big history and that. And so that's what I thought that movie captured so well. And like for a white dude to not be able to understand that life, you lived a very great adolescent life. You did not have that struggle. I don't understand.
And also like the audacity for him to be like, sure, you didn't understand it, but the confidence he had to actually put that to words and call it out to me is like, yeah, I have no words. Like the fact that he watched it and he had the confidence to be like, you know, I'm going to talk about how this didn't work for me. Yeah. And like totally just like shun every single Asian people that are watching this and like finally feeling hurt. Like he's like, no, I'm just going to take that away from them. Like it didn't work for me. So it shouldn't work for everyone else. It deserves a horrible review. Like what?
Honestly, I mean, let's just note that the review has been taken down and so has his tweet. It's just fucking embarrassing because mm-hmm. it just shows like how someone like that literally is incompetent for a reviewer job. That is totally incompetent because you can't even relate to a character. That's the entire point. You guys can find ways to relate to aliens and like legendary, like mythical
Star
beasts.
Wars. Like, yeah. come on.
And this is the one that makes you mad. Like, come on. That's fucking crazy. And like,
he was the panda's so cute. Like, what's there to hate? Oh my God. But Abby,
I loved her.
Abby stole the whole show, carried the entire movie on her back. I'm so obsessed with her. Just like the entire dynamic also, which is so good. And I feel
the
like
friends were so cute.
So cute. And I love that. There's so many small moments that I saw myself in mailing when it was happening. Like one thing that I took a note about was that she's driving in the car with her mom. And then she's talking about her friend. And then she was like, so the mom makes a comment about like, oh, like, you know, your friend is kind of a bit weird, isn't she? And then it's like a passing comment a mom would make, but the expression May had on her face about how impactful your mom's words and feedback and expression of certain things are, like carries with you. And then how that kind of showed off her when she was interacting with her friend again. Like I've been in that position so many times. And like, now I know that like, you know, I was just trying to impressed my mom and like I had her on such a high pedestal that whatever she says is real. And it took me a long time to like acknowledge that she's also human. You know, she makes mistakes and she has her own thoughts, but that doesn't dictate what I need to do. But like the origin of honor and then like the respect that you have to give your parents at a really young age was very impressionable for me. Whatever my mom said went, and I never had the consciousness to really sink through that. And like, I felt like that scene may have been so small, maybe other people didn't catch it, but like that really hit me home and it was like such a small thing.
No, that's an amazing point. And like that scene, because it's literally her mom saying that, it's like her world's being farther apart. You're like, I just want my mom to like, kind of accept what I'm doing out here in school and the people that love me and like my friends and their different cultures. So I think the friend they were talking about is white, like Miriam. And immediately her mom's like, no, she's weird. And like, that's like immediately like it's heartbreaking because you're just like, I really want these worlds to come together. Like, how can I, you know, enjoy enjoy my cultural roots and then also enjoy this life that I'm living here. And it's just like that one little comment is your mom being like, it's a disapproval. Like she's saying it not in a harsh way, but she's basically like, no, I don't agree with like her. And you like the back end of it, the inference is like, you probably shouldn't be hanging out with her. And that breaks your heart. Yeah. It breaks your heart for sure.
Another part that I really liked, and I think about a lot personally too, is in the scene where they're trying to like go through the portal or whatnot. And then it actually shows a scene of May's mom at her age and feeling sad and going through the same thing she is in terms of trying to impress her mom, which is like May's grandma. And I think about this a lot because, you know, trying to relate my experiences with my mom's age and the lack of understanding she has of me, I always try to think about like, you know, when my mom was my age, I wonder what kind of pressures that she had, what kind of experiences that she had to endure. So that kind of definitely, it like humanized it. And I think seeing it in like, a Disney Pixar way of her being the exact same age as Mei Ling and crying. And then, you know, now that we got to uncover the pressures that she had from her mom and how it's like generational trauma, sadly, that gets stemmed down. But it was really cool to see that, like, you know, she, my mom or Mei's mom also has her their own way of showing up for their kids. And then the more openness and communication you can have, you can actually break that and then make a different story for the next generation to come.
Yeah. So I actually was asked this question, but for you, if you were like 13 and you saw a movie like this, like what would that mean to you?
I think it would have been such a gateway to talk more about my family, like family life when I was in school. I think even that what there's one scene when it's after school and the kids are fine, like, okay, we're going to do all this. We're going to go have fun and do this and this and this. And then May's like, oh, I have to go and clean. And then she was like, but I actually really like cleaning. And like, I remember having to lie to my white friends being like, oh, I actually really like going to Korean school on Saturdays. But like, did I really? No. And like, I feel like those little things that I had to do as a defense mechanism or as an armor for myself, because I didn't want to have this long conversation about how I felt or what it is. I think just even seeing a character like me that looks similar to me in that magnitude would have meant so much. Because the only thing we really had at the time was like Mulan, and that was like so not, you know, I couldn't really relate to that on my day to day.
That was truly from a different world, like in the ancient days maybe. But no, that's a good point. Like basically that lie of being like, oh, I love going to art school, I love piano. It's just so much easier. You don't even have the tools at that age to explain those things, right? Like you're
or
like,
why I have shame around it. Like, exactly. I don't know why. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's why this movie to me is so impactful. And I honestly think that with more of this and this, like this is a gateway for maybe somebody who's younger, who's like us, like when they're 13, to be like, you see how like you can live with both worlds, not polarized, but like, you know, find like maybe watch that movie with your mom if she's kind of like still old, like in that old school kind of vibe, and be like, you can see how like, you know, they come together to make it work. Like instead of being like your friend's weird at the end, like they get in, spoiler, like they invite them to the temple, like with the aunties, like,
And have their food together.
Yeah. And so the best part of this is like, I think it's actually changing with all these examples, but the best thing is like my partner, Wayne, he's Filipino and his niece is like a young Filipino girl. I think she's like 8. And, you know, when she grew up one time, she had seaweed to school, which is like, it's like 20 years since I've been in high school. Yeah. It's in Whole Foods now, but there's still going to be like questions. So like, you know, there was a little white kid who was like, what is that? It like, looks like it smells bad. And she was able to be like, well, I really like it. Do you want to try some? And like, that's really what this is what this is about, right? This is about like sharing. And instead of putting up defenses and all these kind of things of shame and not shaming us for having to do that, because at our time it was like a bit, I would say a lot worse. I don't know. You know, just sharing that. And then also doing it the other way with your mom when you can, maybe when you're young. And it's a very hard barrier to break. There's still, I still face that with my mom to this day. But maybe you're just like, hey, you want to watch this movie on like Chinese dub and then maybe understand it a bit more. And, you know, maybe we can figure it out from there. But it gives you like someone else on a big screen on a big scale that's like, oh, I'm not alone in this, like we've all gone through it, we can all just relate to it now.
Yeah. And I love that it really portrayed different types of Asian stereotypes in a way. Like, I, of course it did have the tiger mom, but I love seeing the dad and, you know, having that conversation, that softness. I think this was such a great eruption into something so white as Hollywood and, you know, the world of Disney to be able to have a platform like this and share also from like a Toronto perspective. And I think that obviously like resonated with us so much more. There were so many nostalgic moments of like the Much Music logo and just like Daisy Mar, like so many things that I think really helped me soothe my heart a little bit, especially during this time. But as we're wrapping up, like if there is any resources or organizations or any like drives out there or tools or whatnot that anyone can share, we'd love to hear them and share them as well. Because like, I'm just very like, what's my next step? And like, I just want to be able to make an impact as much as we can. So yeah, our DMs are open. Please let us know. And we're always here to talk too. So if there's anything that you want to unload, we're here.
Let us know. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for listening to Made In. Email us at hi@imadein.com. We're also on Instagram and Twitter @imadein_. Thank you again.